terms of the work of the commission for a new Lutheran church. And I thought I would begin by giving a very brief highlight of some of the things that are currently happening. And then I thought we might most profitably spend most of our time tonight dealing with questions or discussion or concerns that people might have about what's happening. As you probably know, the beginning of this in a formal way was in the fall of 1982, when the conventions of the three merging churches, AELC, ALC, LCA, concurrently held conventions which set in motion the commitment to unity and the machinery to work toward in that direction. The first meeting of the Commission of 70, which is charged with the task of putting it together, began that same month, which is quite remarkable, and I believe that all 70 members of the Commission were present. One of the rather remarkable features of their work so far, they've held five meetings, and most of the people have been present at all of these meetings. The target date, I'll just give you a couple of broad days, the target date for the startup of the new church is January 1, 1988. They are moving along in the direction of meeting that target, because it means if we are to actually do that, we will have to have constitution and bylaws ready in the fall of 86 for the general conventions of the three churches to approve, and there would be a constituting convention probably in May of 1987. In doing its work thus far, the commission established three basic task forces to do several of their basic pieces of work. They had a task force on theology, the report of which was shared with all of the congregations. There was a task force report on society, attempting to look at sort of the social context in which the church does its ministry, and a task force on purpose, which finally evolved into the development of 11 different task forces on design for the new church, each of them dealing with a particular area of work or mission, such as, for instance, parish services in congregations, or the work of social service agencies, or the work of communication, or American missions, world missions, social ministry, various facets of the church's work. These 11 design task forces have now completed or nearly completed. A couple of them are still working on bits and pieces, but they're nearly completed with their work. And the product of their work feeds through another basic committee of the commission, which is a committee on design, which tries to put this all together, synthesize it, and offer some possible directions for the commission itself. In February of this year, the commission held its fourth meeting and issued this report, the third report of the commission. This was printed in the Lutheran Standard, the Lutheran, and I'm not sure, I don't remember what the vehicle is for the AELC. The district conventions and the synods of the LCA and the synods of the AELC were all given opportunity to study this material and to respond on poll cards on the various parts of the report. Report dealt with things like a preliminary statement of faith, statement of purpose, perspective on ministry, some preliminary designs for the new church, and a few other things. On the first page of this report, we're told that in a preliminary statement that after receiving the responses from the district and synod conventions, the commission would be responding to what they heard. And then it says the commission's timetable calls for completing the preliminary narrative design for the new church at its fall 1984 meeting. For further evaluation of the proposed design during 1985, for completing a final narrative design early in 1986, and for submitting a constitution and bylaws to the synod, district, and national conventions of the three church bodies in 1986 for review and action. Let me pick up just a few of the sort of items in this report that have received the most discussion. One is the statement of faith, and particularly there, the section that deals with the scriptures has received considerable discussion. Let me read the three brief paragraphs, because it's important, I think, to know what's in the report. It says, on the basis of the sacred scriptures, the Church's creed, and the Lutheran confessional writings, we affirm that the Word of God, through whom God created everything, is Jesus Christ, God incarnate, through whose person and life God fashions a new creation. That's the first paragraph. Second paragraph, the Word of God is God's message to us, both law and gospel, revealing judgment and mercy through word and deed, beginning with the Word in creation, continuing in the history of Israel, and centering in all its fullness in the person and work of Jesus Christ. Third paragraph, the Word of God is the sacred scriptures, because, inspired by God's Spirit, speaking through their authors, they are the record and witness of God's revelation, centering in Jesus Christ. Through them, God speaks to us. They are authoritative as source of the Church's proclamation and the norm for the Church's life and faith. Now, I would say candidly that some have objected to that statement, not necessarily because of what is there, but because of a couple of words with which they have become enamored, which are not there. The words inerrant and infallible. Words which, incidentally, are very new in the history of Lutheran usage, having come into being in Lutheran usage not until about 1930. But the concern, of course, is that there be a high view of the authority of Scripture. I personally believe that's present in this document. I believe, for instance, that our Lutheran forebears, for lo these many centuries, have held to a very high view of scriptures without using the particular terms inerrant and infallible, which are in the ALC Constitution presently, but which have caused a great deal of difficulty for interpretation, not so much because of the words themselves, but because of the way they've been used by a number of the fundamentalist groups, which puts them into an altogether different context. We can talk about that later if you want to do that. Then there is in this document a statement of purpose, which is kind of a long listing of 11 purposes and 25 objectives. And again, I think they are a good summary of what the Church's mission is about. I would pick up only one comment in this section, and that is that if you compare this statement of purpose and objectives to that of the present documents of the ALC, and I'm not sure about the LCA at this point, you discover here that there is a fair recognition that the church has a significant role to play in social ministry and in the social realm generally, which was totally absent in the documents of 1960 and 61. And I think that that's an indication of the church having moved some distance in that particular area. There is a third and the briefest section of this report, which is a perspective on ministry, or a perspective for ministry. Really doesn't say very much. Doesn't say very much because on the one hand, this is a very thorny kind of issue. Lutherans have not been so good at sorting out the issues on what we mean by ordained ministry, for instance. Partly, I think it was a matter of frustration on the part of the commissioners. They felt they had to get some certain pieces in place to report to the churches, and they frankly had not had the kind of substantive discussion on this area that would allow them to say very much. And there are some real differences of viewpoint in the commission. One of them has to do with the whole matter of a commissioned ministry, for instance. You'll find in these few brief paragraphs references to commissioned ministry, references that seem to have no context theologically, so that it's very difficult, I think, to judge what's happening here. But the term commissioned ministry is used in a couple of different ways, and I personally think it's confusing. There is talk, for instance, about upholding the ministry of the whole people of God, which I think all of us applaud. The concept of vocation is one which is one of the real jewels of our heritage, and one which, nonetheless, we have neglected to a large extent. We need to recapture. But some folks are talking about commissioning persons to carry out their baptismal vocation in the world, doing whatever it is that they do, and thereby enhancing a kind of sense of accountability to the church by doing it. That's one of the ways in which commissioning is used. So that, for instance, if one is a public school teacher, let's say, one might be commissioned to be a public school teacher, or one might be commissioned to be a farmer, or one might be commissioned to drive a truck. Whatever it is that one uses to make one's livelihood, so that there would be this sense that one is serving the community in the service of God through that particular occupation. I'll be candid to say that some of us, including myself, feel that that's confusing, because we are really accountable to the community of faith by virtue of our baptism. And I personally happen to believe that that kind of commissioning service or usage would somehow serve to undercut the significance of baptism, as though we were not already accountable. And it could lead, I think, also to a kind of two-track laity. There are the sort of the elite who have been commissioned to do what they do, and the non-elite who just do what they're supposed to do. But the other way in which the word commissioning is used grows out of a history of some different concerns in the church. That is, commissioning persons to do full-time, usually, service in the church, such as Christian day school teachers, or parish workers, or persons who would be commissioned lay persons to carry on a ministry on behalf of the faithful, on behalf of the congregation, in a professional kind of way. Here we have different histories. The AELC has a history of calling day school teachers that is different from the other churches. The ALC has some commissioned parish workers, for instance, now. The LCA, I think, has some, I'm not sure they use the term commissioning, but there are some, there is some similar category. And it's frankly one of those issues that eventually they're going to have to solve, I suppose, by simply voting on the issue and the majority wins, but at the moment it's very much up for grabs. Then there is a fairly long section in this report on preliminary design. One of the areas that has drawn a fair amount of discussion is the area of ownership of property, and I'm not going to take time to read that now. We can go into that if you have questions about it. Let me make a couple of other comments. There is a strong emphasis in the document and in the discussions of the commission on interdependence in the church. They want to underscore the fact that whether one is serving in a congregation, or if one is serving in a regional structure of some sort, or if one is serving in the national structure, that they are all interdependent pieces. It is not to be a hierarchical church with sort of national on the top and a region or two regions in the center and then congregations at the bottom somehow, but rather that there is an interdependence, a partnership between whatever structures are established. That's one strong theme. Another strong theme is that of inclusiveness. One of the words which is heard most often is the word inclusive. We are to be an inclusive church. That means that we use the talents equally of men and women. We include persons of color, persons whose primary language is something other than English, in the makeup of this church. One of the very very much contested pieces in this third report was the stipulation or the suggestion that first of all, with respect to clergy representation, the clergy would have 1/4 or 1/3 of representation of the representatives at regional and national conventions. That's different than it is now. In the ALC, for instance, a 1,000 delegate convention at the national level is half clergy and half lay. Secondly, there was the stipulation that at all levels beyond congregational level, boards, regional assemblies, national conventions, there would be 50% women, 50% men. And in these same bodies, there would be 20% persons of color or persons whose language is other than English. Well, then in the in this third report, they sort of sketched out two alternate designs for the new church. First was the possibility of a three-expression church: local congregations, a regional assembly, something like the present districts of the ALC or synods of the LCA, and a national expression. They're very careful to use words that don't, they talk about expressions now rather than levels, for instance. Level is a, to talk about levels or tiers is a no-no. You talk about expressions. So in this case, there would be about 60 regions in the church, each having about 50 to 250 congregations. Most might be toward that upper end, but there was a recognition that in some places, such as in the Caribbean and in other places, it would be probably in the neighborhood of 50 congregations. A second alternate was to have a four-expression church with a congregation, a small region of about 100 or 105 congregations banded together, served in a sort of pastoral way by a bishop who would have minimal staff, and then larger regions, probably about 9, which would serve as regional resource and programmatic centers, serving the programmatic needs and a national expression. Now, as I said, we had this these polls at the district and synod conventions. And I am happy to report, because I had some concern about this, I am happy to report that the Commission took very seriously what they discovered from the nearly 17,000 people who responded in those polls. And let me just indicate a couple of those things real quickly. First of all, where those 17,000 people spoke most clearly was in relationship to the quotas. They said it's simply unrealistic. While the principle, while the ideal is good, the notion that you have to have 20%, for instance, persons of color in some parts of the church just didn't make any sense at all. So what they have done is to eliminate the quota arrangement at the regional levels, because it's at the regional level where the differences really occur, stating rather that they're committing themselves to some principle of making sure that everyone gets represented properly. And then they're saying at the national level or at the large regional level, if you go the four expression route, then there will be a kind of quota which will be reduced at that level to a 10% rather than 20% arrangement, so that there is a movement in the direction of being a bit more realistic. And they are saying that instead of having one-fourth, for instance, clergy represented at these levels, they are saying at least 60% of any of these delegate assemblies must be lay, so that there is the possibility for greater clergy involvement, representing that, recognizing that clergy as those who are called professionally to serve in the programs of the church have a stake in being involved in the process. I've probably talked too long already, so rather than filling in on any other details, let me stop at this point and rather open it up to questions or concerns or comments.
As long as we're on the quotas, what did they say about the 50-50 men and women?
Yeah, good. At the upper level, no, excuse me, at the expression of the national level, whatever, they're still retaining there the 50% men and women.
But not at the regional level?
I think at the regional level, I have to check that one. You have a different situation at the regional level because of the difference in the way congregations send delegates to regional assemblies. And they're saying each synod or district shall establish a formula for numbers of lay delegates that will allow at least 60% of the voting delegates to be lay persons, and give each congregation a minimum of 2 lay delegates, one of whom will be male and one of whom will be female, with additional delegates from each congregation being equally divided between male and female, with the odd-numbered delegate being either male or female. So it comes out essentially the same. Now that is a stipulation, of course, for lay representation, recognizing that historically, where we are at the moment, the preponderance of clergy delegates will be male.
Did the people respond favoring one of those, four-tiered and three-tiered structure over the other?
Yes. Most came out in favor of the three expression. Let me see. I have some figures here on that I can share with you. Option one, which is the three expression, lumping all the delegates together from the three church bodies, 39.1% favored or agreed in principle with that, and 7% agreed in principle but would like to make some changes. 27% agreed in principle with the second option, that is the four expression church, and 4.7% agreed in principle but with some changes. Now, the commission at its meeting in June did refine both of those options, and in some sense incorporated what I think they were hearing. For instance, in the three expression alternate, they added a regional resource center, which would not be a new level of bureaucracy, so to speak, but would be something I think like we used to have in the nationally deployed staff for resourcing regions in areas like parish ministry, youth ministry, whatever. And this would not be, these resource centers would be jointly, there would be a joint sort of governance by the districts that they served and the national offices. That's one kind of example of listening to what the comments said, as well as just the sheer statistical figures of responses, because the delegates were all offered the opportunity and encouraged to write comments on the back of their cards about these various things. And that stuff was really read very carefully and summarized by the researchers.
Would the three-tiered expression have a weaker national, weaker level on top as opposed to the four-tiered level? Not on top.
I hear you. People who are, you know, discuss the pros and cons of these various suggestions seem to suggest that with a four-expression arrangement, you might end up with a weaker national expression, that more stuff would be happening at the large regional level in terms of program, etc. And for those who are supporting a three-level arrangement, they see in that some danger in terms of the possibility of developing regional churches after a while, and also the possibility of developing regional as opposed to national strategies for some things where a national strategy may be a better idea, such as support for seminaries, perhaps, or perhaps the matter of transporting resources from one area of the country to another for the sake of American missions. The resources will not be divided evenly in the new church simply because of the way Lutherans happen to be congregated, you know. A four-expression church would allow for more bishops, because in the new revised arrangement now, they are calling for approximately 160 districts in the four-expression church, and each of those would have a bishop. There would be no bishops at the larger regional level in the four-expression church, and in the three-expression there would be approximately 80 districts or synods.
About the acronym Mission for the New Lutheran Church is that term new. I'm just curious to know what your guess is, or anybody's guess is, that you've talked to about that quality of newness.
Yeah.
In which direction are we likely to see new expressions? It doesn't sound like it's going to be very different when it comes to governance. More is still the same echelon. We do the similar thing. What are the chances for new, and in what direction do you think that would appear?
Well, that's an item of some real debate in the commission. And, you know, some people say there isn't very much new about this at all. We're only fooling people if we say it's really new. And others are saying, well, you know, there's possibly, we'll have to see possibilities for new things happening just by different configurations. I really don't know. I think one thing, of course, is the emphasis on inclusiveness. And while we've talked about that some in the church in the past, it has never been quite so prominent as it has been in the work of this commission. I think there will not be any new theology offered. I was hoping for something new in the way of clarification of what we mean by ministry. That was one of my high hopes for the work of the commission, because I think we've had some confusion about what we mean when we use the term ministry for all sorts of sins. And I was hoping that something might really come of this. I'm not sure at this point whether it's going to or not. One of the things, since I've gotten involved to some extent with the work of the commission, I have to tell you frankly, I've scaled back my expectations. I thought that probably the commission would put in place all kinds of policies, basic policy kinds of things for the new church. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that they will have their hands full simply finally putting together a structure that has a chance for working. And then I think that the boards and commissions or whatever of the new church, once it operates, I think they are the ones who are going to have to really struggle with establishing policies and new directions. I don't think that much of that will probably happen before the church begins.
And wouldn't that be better? It's better after we're together that more people work and we gradually find which way, than suddenly saying, because we're getting together, let's change everything.
Yes, I think so. In fact, I think one of the possible dangers of the whole process is that it would be easy to sort of throw overboard what we have learned about what works and what doesn't work in the church in the past. With the concern for newness, I think there are some who I think would be anxious to sort of forget about the accumulated wisdom of the past. And you know, there is such a thing as an institutional memory. And if you don't have that memory, it means you're condemned to flounder for a while. And I think that would really be a tragedy for the church, because we need to recognize that we're a church in mission. We're not just here to rearrange the furniture of structure. We're here because we have a message to proclaim and we have a mission to fulfill. And I would be surely disappointed if we spent all our energy thinking about how we're going to put in place now some new policies or new structures and forgot about what it is that's all for.
I'd just like to ask one more question to follow up on that idea of newness. Because I've had my own kind of expectation at a fairly low level of newness. I'm not even sure that the commission could decide because of that corporate memory and the gathered experience. And put together a new committee, and obviously the churches have come from somewhere.
Yeah.
And take that into account. So I haven't expected a lot in terms of newness, although I gather that one of my chief expectations was not should be realized. But what effect does that Lima document, the Baptism Eucharist Ministry document, have in the deliberations of the Assembly? But now that is very tentative being offered to the churches for their reception now, but are there any clues that that the commission might be looking at in any of its parts?
The commission has received a large number of documents, basically, to work on this. I'm sure that the Lima document is one of them. They have, for instance, the work of the Lutheran Council Division of Theological Studies on the historic episcopate, which feeds into their study of the bishop question. They have had members of the commission who have written papers on ministry and on the episcopate. There's a stack. One of the frustrations, I'm sure, of any of the commission members is that they've really got a notebook that thick for each of their meetings, and to try to go through all that stuff, and you're never sure how many of them have read how much of it. And that's really the problem. There is so much of it, so much material, and yet I think their frustration has been that when they've come to discuss these matters on the floor of the commission, they have often felt compelled to do so in a parliamentary mode, because they've been moving toward fitting pieces together for reports. And that's not the best kind of context in which to have a serious theological discussion. And I think, frankly, the commission members have been discouraged at that point. Now, the other side of that is that at the most recent meeting in June, they did set aside the process for a couple of sessions, and simply kind of had a meeting of the Committee of the Whole where they had some discussion of the ministry questions. And they were finally getting down, I think, to some of the more critical issues. They ended up appointing a couple of committees to bring in some more material at their next meeting. And that's the way commissions work, I guess. But the stuff is there. I'm sure that individual members of the commission have looked at much of that material very seriously. But as a commission together, they have not pondered it in the way in which I think you're envisioning.
Do you feel that the opportunity is being considered to provide for the broadening of the scope of the church? I'm thinking to broaden it to include some of the problems that we discussed in the coming and not that we want to get into the same trap that some of the other church councils and the national group have gotten into, going too far outside of their own discipline. Do you think that we'll come out of this with a potential that the scope of the ministry?
For social ministry, for instance, of various sorts. Yeah, let me read just a couple of the items in the statement of purpose that I think are very good. These are all short statements. That's the nature of the beast. But for instance, work for the dignity of all people through advocacy for justice and direct response to human need, standing in solidarity with the voiceless and the powerless, the poor and the exploited, the homeless and the hungry. That's one. Recognize the setting of daily life as the primary arena for the exercise of Christian calling. Christian calling isn't ushering in church. Christian calling is doing whatever it is that we are called to do in our daily life. Study social issues and trends for the purpose of advocacy, ministry, and institutional change. Seek to discover the root causes of oppression and injustice, and develop programs of advocacy to address those persons, structures of society, and systems of power that contribute to such oppression and injustice. Cooperate with those public and private agencies that seek to enhance the dignity of all persons and work for justice. Relate to civil authorities in areas of mutual endeavor to assist the maintenance of good order, the protection and extension of civil rights, etc., etc. This is what I indicated earlier, that the inclusion of those kinds of statements in the statement of purpose, I think, indicates movement on the part of the churches over the last 2.5 decades in terms of enlarging our sense of what mission is about.
Are those statements just about social ministry, or are those general statements about the purpose of the church?
Those are general statements about the purpose of the church.
When you began, you read the consensus of opinion for the faith of the church.
Yeah.
Nothing was mentioned in that about the Holy Spirit.
Well, the Holy Spirit is here. I just didn't mention it because I was talking about the scriptures. And even there, there is an indication through them, that is the scriptures, God's Spirit speaks to us. In other words, it is the Spirit of God which makes them authoritative for us. But There is a reference, for instance, on the basis of the sacred scriptures, the church's creeds, and the Lutheran confessional writings, we confess our faith in the one God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Well, that part you didn't read.
Yeah.
But I was wondering about that.
Yeah. It's there.
You didn't read the whole statement of faith to us. You just part of it.
No, I just read that those three brief paragraphs on the scriptures, because that's where the most discussion has come.
In speaking of scriptures, has any attention been given to the interpretation of the scriptures? I'm sure it's been done many times, but there is a prevailing attitude among many of the people that I know, as to a little bit of confusion about the literal interpretation of words that were written 2,000 years ago, or expressed 2,000 years in another language, at another time of life, another semantic phase, and now are being interpreted in these times with those same words, and it's confusing to a lot of people. And if any attempt is made to sort of explain this to the lay as to what is the church's understanding of the Bible. I know it's not something that could happen in this kind of...
Yeah, see, that's the point, I think. This is not meant to be a new statement of faith in the sense of a new creed of some sort. This will fit into the documents as a kind of preamble to the Constitution sort of thing. That's what the present church bodies have, is that kind of a quick summary statement as a preamble. For instance, it says in this statement of faith that we affirm the scriptures, we affirm the ecumenical creeds, we affirm the Lutheran confessional writings, all of that, and it's simply saying we are in the line of that whole tradition. It doesn't go into a detail in terms of the kinds of questions I think that you're asking. There is some of that in the longer report of the Task Force on Theology. But again, maybe not in the detail that you're asking for. I guess because they felt that wasn't the place to do that.
But there are other church statements that do exactly that, help us even interpret our own part, the ALC Constitution,
yes,
to get words like inerrant,
yes,
infallible.
Yes.
And that's as far back as the 70s, that's the
or before.
Did you include the Missouri Synod in that?
In this commission?
In that commission.
No, the Missouri Synod was not interested.
Okay, so I don't know.
Is there any separate statement in the purposes about world mission, or is that the same to be part of the mission?
No, there's... I'm not sure I'm going to... For instance, conduct its ministry with a global consciousness and sense of responsibility consistent with its understanding of God as creator, redeemer, and sanctifier of all persons and all things. Well, that's not as clear as it's there. It is there, the global. In fact, in the work of the task forces, there was a real debate about whether global and American missions should be separated. I think they finally came down on the side of separating them for the sake, simply because it was just too immense a piece of work to put into one unit in the church. But global mission is certainly involved in the vision of what we're about as a church.
Are you aware of any actions coming out of the LC convention that during this past week relating to the CNLC at all?
I left before that news came, and so I'm not aware of it yet. No.
What has happened to the common service agencies of particularly ALC and LCA, Lutheran Council, World Ministries, Campus Ministry, all of those kinds of agencies that have been doing work for both church bodies for 30 years, and have a considerable time for activity staff and so on, like the social service agency in various states. What's going to happen?
That hasn't been decided at all yet. It really hasn't even been discussed by the commission, though it is in the report of the task force that deals with those things. My best guess is that things like campus ministry or service to military personnel, those kinds of things, that will be done in the structure of the new church itself, that we won't probably need an umbrella organization like LACUSA, and that those things that we do cooperatively now with Missouri, we can do bilaterally with Missouri then. So that the functions, I think, will remain, but they'll be absorbed into the new structure. That's my best guess. As I say, it really hasn't been talked about in commission.
What is the discussion in terms of where the location of the new national expression will be?
I thought they should have brought the commission to Minneapolis in January to decide that issue. Sure. I mean, I think we probably would have gotten into some nice climate like San Antonio or someplace. But that they have now appointed a site selection committee to look at various possibilities and see what the pros and cons of those various sites will be. There are now 7 persons appointed, 3 from the ALC, 3 from the LCA, and 1 from the AELC, who will begin now to do that work. Yes, Beck?
If you were a betting person, would you bet that the commission will come down on a 3 expression?
If I were a betting person, I would bet that they would come down on the side of a 3 expression with regional resource centers of some sort. Not in the work of the commission, I can respond to that a bit, except it really hasn't been brought up in the work of the commission with the whole ecumenical picture. Mm-hmm. Has not been there much. There have been observers from the other denominations at the commission. The task force on ecumenical affairs has talked, for instance, about the membership of the new church in the World Council of Churches and in the National Council of Churches. And that could be kind of a sticky issue in the years ahead. I'll be happy to talk about that if you're interested. But we are at a critical time in terms of the dialogues with other church families. We are farthest along, perhaps, with the Episcopal dialogue. I happen to be a member of that one, and so it's the one I know probably the most about, where we now have the interim sharing of the Eucharist, and we're in the third round of dialogue, which just met early this summer for the second time. We are presently involved in a study of the report of the Lutheran Reformed dialogue. Within the next 2-year period, congregations of the 3 uniting churches will be asked to study the report of the Lutheran Reformed Dialogue, which calls for a number of things like sharing the Eucharist, etc. That's another piece of it. We will have to respond in some way at the conventions in 1986. We have the Lima document, which has been studied by some of the seminary faculties, by a special task force, by some congregations. Again, that will call for some response by 1985. And Dr. Preuss is wanting us now to look, to go back and search through all of the results of the Lutheran Roman Catholic dialogues to this point to see where we can push for some specific areas of, well, some action. In the past, we've sort of received all of them as the work of a nice committee, but we haven't done much with them. He is asking now that we go back and see whether there isn't a way of maybe the word is receiving some of this material in a way that would be more prominent than it has been in the past. A big step in that direction, of course, was taken with the last document on justification that the Lutheran Reformed dialogue produced just last fall. Yes?
I was a delegate to the LCA convention in Toronto.
Oh, okay.
Just wound up. And in response to the question from the balcony, the LCA spent 7.5 hours plenary time on the report, and part of that time it did go into a committee of the whole also to discuss some of the things that you suggested the committee did itself. It also had forums and study sessions on it, so there must have been at least 10 hours of time, between 10 hours, 10 and 12 hours of time working on the problem. They also considered 190 sense motions from the various district synod levels and some 70 odd memorials dealing with the report. Some of these you could lump into one kind of subject, and then some were just kind of scattered. All of these will go, of course, to the committee, and each of the other two church bodies are going to have an opportunity to do the same thing at their conventions, I understand.
Did your general convention in Toronto pass any sense resolutions, sense
yes,
motions?
Some. They were... for example, the three expression church was passed as a sense motion. We passed everything as a sense motion so that the committee wouldn't feel like that there was a binding there. That it was.
Maybe I should explain for the benefit of ALC people that the term sense motion is not one that's familiar, that's in our vocabulary.
Well, it wasn't in ours either.
Essentially what it means is a kind of straw poll,
yes,
which is to be taken seriously, but it is not binding as a formal resolution of a convention would be, leaving the commission free to consider it as the considered response of a convention without binding the commission, and usually attached to it is also the number of persons voting for and against, so that you can see whether this is a sort of 51-49 arrangement or whether it's really a 90%, 10% kind of expression.
Yes. The three expression church was in the high 90s.
Really?
At sense motion.
That's even much higher than the delegates to the LCA synods passed it.
And the goals, quotas, there was a lot of discussion about that. And it really wasn't clear whether they were talking about quotas or whether they were talking about goals. But it seems like that if it was quotas, that they were going to have a lot of trouble, and if it was goals, an easier time of it. And even on both of those, there was no real, didn't seem to be a real clear-cut consensus. It was in the 50-some.
I got the sense that the committee is still struggling.
Yes.
And there's not a consensus yet. And I think that the work of the conventions and the material that goes to the committee as a result of the conventions is going to be very, very significant, very, very important to arriving at some kind of consensus.
Yeah. Yeah. As I said, I really felt good after the June meeting of the commission to know that they really listened carefully to what was being said by the delegates to the Senate and District Conventions, and I'm sure the same will be the case now with the National Conventions when they meet in late October, early November.
ALC and ALC both, I think.
Both will be meeting before the commission does in the fall, yeah. Yes.
Is there any concern that perhaps the quality issue or the goals issue list, as it becomes a hotter issue, mainly engages the inclusiveness of the state?
Say a little bit more what you mean
by
that.
I'm just wondering if, on the one hand, the church is saying that it wants to be a more inclusive church and it wants to open its arms and broaden its scope in terms of the clergy, both the laity and the language and the attendance and that sort of thing, but yet on the other hand, not willing to take leadership to provide the access or the leadership possibilities, getting different kinds of people into seminaries.
Okay.
I mean, in a way, it just kind of says whole mechanism.
Yeah, that's really moving in a different area than the way in which it's been picked up in the commission in terms of representation at constituted assemblies and that kind of thing, conventions. You're asking different kinds of questions, I think, and that would require a much more complex answer because the various churches have gone at it differently in terms of.
So the quotas just speak to the delegates of the convention.
That's right. No, not at that point. I think our time is up and they will be wanting this space for Vespers, or not Vespers, Compline. Thank you for coming.